everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you?
It's a brand new day.
Respect yourself.
Well, what a song from Joe Cocker, Mana from Heaven, I would say. I've been ordered to say that by a friend of mine who bought me coffee this morning. Well, I hoped he was going to, but it didn't actually happen, but that was all right. Today we talk about ASSIST, the short version for training called Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training. And I understand that there has been a report this morning that there's going to be changes to the Mental Health Act, and so and part of that is a goal to reduce suicide by 20% by the year 2030. Now, ASSIST is a suicide first aid workshop. It teaches participants to recognise when someone may have thoughts of suicide and to work with them to create a plan that will support their immediate safety. Since its development in 1983, ASSIST has regularly updated its training to reflect improvements in knowledge and practice. And amazingly, over 1 million people have taken the workshop. Studies reveal that ASSIST helps reduce suicidal feelings in those at risk and is a cost-effective way to help address the problem of suicide. And that problem obviously is very dramatic in New Zealand. There's been a 10% increase in the suicide numbers each year for the last 2 years at least, and the total is now at 660. So here to tell us about the benefits of ASSIST and how it works with people feeling suicidal is Kate Godwood, a self-employed educator and collaborator. So welcome, Kate, to Take It From Us. Whereabouts are you at the moment? You're on mobile, I know that, but whereabouts in the country?
Kia ora. I'm actually in Auckland. I'm waiting for a plane at the moment, so and I'm flying down to Dunedin.
Well, so not the best.
Beautiful welcome, Sheldon.
Not the best day to be flying, although the weather is starting to come right. What's it like out at the airport?
It's not too bad, actually. I just came in from the Waikato, and it was thunder and lightning and lots of rain, so it's been a nice little break.
Yeah, well, apparently they had a very scary time in Onehunga, where even tradies were scared to get out of their vans because of the thunder and lightning this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
So, anyway, Kate, you're reasonably well-known, or we're reasonably well-known between each other. We've been around the traps in mental health, but how about giving us some background on your roles in mental health?
Oh, sure. Okay. So I started out as a group facilitator, working with people with mental health experience in the community. And that was a great time. It was in 2001 that I started working in the sector. And it was during the whole sort of recovery revival, and lots of really interesting things were happening. So we had the Charles Rapp strength model coming through, and the Mary Ellen Rapp plan, you know, all of that stuff was sort of bedding itself in New Zealand, and I was really, really lucky to be trained by both Charlie and Mary Ellen to be a facilitator in both of their programs. So that kind of set me on my journey as a trainer or a facilitator, I guess. And I did some really interesting work working with clients in the community, but also bringing in people who didn't have mental health or lived experience into the group work that we were doing. And there was no advertising about mental health. It was just about people being together with a common goal, which whatever that task may have been. And, yeah, it was great. It was a really interesting time. And then I slipped into doing some work in the family violence sector And so I was doing community training, how to help people to be more effective helpers with people who are experiencing intimate partner violence and or exposure to violence. And that was a really hard sell. You know, that was back in the beginning when the It's Not Okay campaign had just started, and getting people really engaged in this community issue was hard. But, you know, you look at us now, what, 15 years later, and it's an amazing shift. And then I moved into working with people online with the National Depression Initiative. That's the John Kerwin stuff. I was really privileged to be able to do some brief intervention work with young people. So that's using text and email, and also with adults. And obviously suicide was an issue that came up a lot for people. And then I started working as a trainer in the field of suicide, and was the National Suicide Prevention Manager for Lifeline for a number of years. So that's kind of... Well, you know, I kind of fell into this work, but it was, yeah, it's been an amazing journey.
You fell into it. Was there any reason that you chose mental health?
So my mother had always worked in mental health. My family has experience with mental health, and I had my own personal journey in that. And it kind of made sense to me, trying to understand what it was all about, why the world was like it was. And I mean, I guess that's kind of what attracted me to it. And I love people. And, you know, it's a very human experience to have human emotions and experience mental distress.
And you want to keep them alive.
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
And this training program, ASSIST, is really essentially, I suppose, a suicide prevention initiative.
Yes, it is part of the suicide prevention plan around, you know, educating people who work on the front line to be more ready, willing and able to help somebody with thoughts of suicide, absolutely.
Well, I promoted it as a result of you sending an email offering the ASSIST program to people, that framework, and I pushed that out to all of the framework services staff, and I believe one or two picked it up, and one of them particularly was very enthusiastic about the two-day workshop and found it very, very helpful, you know, with some of the clients that she works with.
Oh, I'm really pleased to hear that, Sheldon. It's always good to hear feedback from people and their experience at the workshop.
Yeah. Well, you know, on your website it says that ASSIST has helped over 1 million people in New Zealand since it started in 1983. That's very significant.
Yeah, it's trained over 1 million people. That's worldwide. It's not just in New Zealand. I think when the last figures... I remember seeing we had trained somewhere around the 1,000, maybe 1,500 people.
Oh, yeah. In New Zealand?
In New Zealand, yeah.
So this is an international initiative?
It is. So it's part of an organisation called Living Works, and they started off, but they're in Ontario and Canada. So there are a bunch of suicidologists who got together and thought there must be a better way that we could be addressing this issue and responding to people, really. It was out of the need to respond to people.
Do you call yourself a suicidologist?
No, I don't call myself a suicidologist. I call myself a human. Yeah, no, I wouldn't call myself a suicidologist, Sheldon. I think, you know, that's a different ballpark around the sort of academic parts of it, which I don't. Mine is really about the human interaction. It's the engagement of one human to another, and how do we respond and meet the need of that human.
So your own sort of maybe empathy and compassion and humanity, what impact has working in mental health, you know, what impact has it had on those sorts of values for you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's been huge. It's a huge learning curve, because obviously you come in and you have ideals and the way that the world should run, and it's not necessarily the landscape that you're playing in. So you do have to shift your you don't shift your values, but you shift how you allow your values to work with you creatively when it comes to people. Does that make sense? It kind of sounds a bit waffly.
Well, I hope that my own compassion and empathy and humanity has grown as a result of working in mental health. I think I had a lot to learn about being a little bit self-obsessed and that sort of thing, but I think working in mental health has taught me how to think of other people rather than myself.
Yeah, I think for me the biggest growing I had was around my own mental health journey, as opposed to working in mental health and working with people. You have to be quite resilient to do that because, you know, people have so many struggles and it certainly does open your heart, absolutely, don't get me wrong. But I don't think, for me personally, I think the best learning I got was through my own experience facing it. Facing mental health struggles and mental distress, facing those on my own.
Right, working in mental health has been helpful to your own personal experiences?
It certainly meant that I knew the pathways, but it didn't help with reaching out because obviously there's a lot of self-stigma that sits there and then societal stigma. So breaking through all of that stuff, I knew that I needed support and help and I wanted to reach out for help and I knew how to do that, but that wasn't necessarily just an easy step change.
So was it stigma and self-stigma that prevented you?
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so open about it, because I know that that stigma exists and it shouldn't, because people should be able to reach out and we should be able to reach out to others without feeling ashamed.
Well, that stigma and discrimination, of course, you were involved with Like Minds fairly intensely, and it's Like Minds' claim that that's a major barrier to people getting well. But what role do you think stigma and discrimination plays in suicide?
Well, I think that we talk a lot about resilience. And building resilience with people, and I absolutely think that we need to continue to do that, and that has a place. One of the things that we don't recognise enough is that it's hard to continue to build resilience when you're facing discrimination on different levels every day.
Right.
And in actual fact, we as a community and as a society need to change the way that we respond to people who need help. As opposed to the opposite of that, which is that the person themselves needs to reach out for help. They need to be doing all the legwork. So I think that it has a major role to play, and people are suffering on multiple levels of discrimination and stigma, and resilience is not going to be enough to get them through it all the time.
So
that's a big ask.
What does your assist suicide first aid trainings say about? It sounds as though resilience is a major plank of supporting people that may be at risk of suicide.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So getting people to cope and use your own internal coping skills is really, really important when you're wanting to increase safety. So that's definitely a part of what we call the safety plan, if you like, or the coping plan that we do at the end of the framework. But it's the bits in the front and in the middle that are really important that I think sometimes we lose as humans, and that is the reaching out and then the really truly listening and hearing what somebody has to say without having to get into deep therapeutic work, unless you have those skills, obviously. But it's that kind of, and I know this from my own experience, I know the magic of having people who really hear you and are willing to stand beside you and help you move to another place.
One of the ironies, Kate, to me in mental health is that there are a large number of people working in mental health who have no idea about listening.
Oh, absolutely. So we've got people all over the place who have no idea about listening, truly connecting, like really, truly connecting with another human being. And there are so many different factors that come into that, and a lot of it has to do with time and also because people are very sort of singular in their idea of what their role is. And I get that because they're funded to do that or that's what their job prescription says. And we kind of forget the humanness of every interaction that we have with others.
But if we're working in mental health and we're there to support, then surely listening is one of the crucial assets that you bring to the person who is at risk.
Oh, I agree completely. And that's kind of what we have to retrain people to do when we're looking at the ASSIST program. So when people come in, we spend a lot of time on those micro skills. How do you listen? How is it that you actually hear a person and allow them to see that you're hearing them?
So this is one of the focus of ASSIST, is it? You said those upfront things that you address with people right at the start of the training.
Yeah, so one of the barriers to being an effective helper is our own attitude. Often people will know what to do, you know, they'll often know what to do. But the reason why it's so difficult to actually implement the doing is because of their own internal dialogue or their own attitudes and beliefs around the topic of suicide, for example. And what we do in the beginning of ASSIST is we talk about that. We talk about what are your beliefs and attitudes, and they're not right or wrong. They are you, and based on your experience, that we have to become aware of them so that we can put them aside when we're actually dealing with somebody who has a need that needs to be met.
Well, let's come back, Kate, and talk a bit about perhaps some of the feedback that you get from clients in terms of their attitudes towards helping people that are suicidal. We'll take a music break. What have you got for us, Declan?
I'm going to surprise you till I've introduced it first. Billy Joel, he attempted suicide in 1970 and he was later asked to write a song on suicide prevention for teens. The first recording that he did, he said, was rather depressing tone, so he rewrote it more upbeat. The video and song were presented in a light-hearted manner, which in many ways makes the message more powerful. The song is You're Only Human. It's from Billy Joel, of course. You're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting on Planet FM 104.6 every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
Share of men. Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and Mental Health Radio Take It From Us is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. Now, today we're talking to Kate Godwood, who's waiting out at Auckland Airport to catch a flight to Dunedin. She's a self-employed educator and collaborator with a suicide first aid training program called ASSIST. That's A-S-I-S-T. Are you heading down to Dunedin, Kate, to do a program down there?
Yeah, I am. But it's not, well, it is part of the suicide prevention work, but it is around stigma and discrimination. That's what I'm heading down to do.
Right. Well, we talked to a woman that runs Life. Is it Life Matters down there?
Yes.
Suicide prevention. Are you meeting with her?
No, I haven't seen Corinda for a while since I've kind of shifted from working in an NGO to being on my own. But and I know it's a fly in, fly out. So I'm not going to have an opportunity to catch up with her. But I do follow her work
on Facebook.
Yeah, I do. And yeah, she's been doing some amazing stuff down in Dunedin.
She certainly is, and pretty much on a unfunded, voluntary sort of basis.
Yeah, that's right. And she has a day job that she has to hold as well.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, it's people like Corinda who we talked to fairly recently on Take It From Us, people with passion that they're the people we need in mental health. So we were talking about some of the values or some of the attitudes, I suppose is more correct, that people who come to attend your training program, some of the attitudes that they bring with them. Are you able to talk about some of those attitudes that may be helpful or may be barriers to helping people that are suicidal?
Yeah, so sometimes people have a value that has come in that there isn't really much you can do, which is completely untrue because suicide is preventable. But that is sometimes a message that we can get when we're growing up that, these things happen, there's not a lot you can do. So that's one attitude. Another is, I just want to say that some people's attitudes can be their only barriers to effective helping if they get in the way of what the person with thoughts of suicide has in terms of their needs.
So just pass that one by. Just pass that one by. By me again.
So they're only a barrier. An attitude can only be a barrier if they get in the way of helping the person with thoughts of suicide. So you can use your attitude, which because the person with thoughts may hold the same attitude about suicide.
Right.
For example, they might feel that for whatever reason, for their religious or spiritual reasons, that it is against their belief. And that in itself is an attitude that many people can have. And if you as a helper happen to hold that same attitude, then it's an opportunity for you and the person with thoughts who also has the same attitude to have a dialogue around that, because there's a struggle there, isn't there? The struggle is that I have this belief, but yet I still feel compelled to want to do this. And then having that opens a doorway for discussion around, what's led somebody to this place where they'll be thinking about this. And it may be a potential protective factor for the person. It may not, but it's being aware of your own attitude and how they might be helpful in an intervention and how they might actually hinder an intervention.
I mean, you've mentioned what might be leading to somebody wanting to take their life. Do you have insights as a result of being involved in this training from people who are trying to support those people that want to end it all? Do you have insights as to what are some of the challenges?
Yeah, I do. Some of the challenges are around hearing the story. So sometimes, often when people come back to an idea over and over, it's because a need's not being met. And it's about slowing things down. Sometimes we need to slow things down. Where am I stepping too fast as a helper, trying to get this person maybe to a safety plan, when in actual fact what's required here is to hear some story, to really engage with this person or get somebody involved at that level that can really work with them around their reoccurring thoughts. Mm. So sometimes that doesn't happen. And I've seen that a lot with people really struggling as helpers. How do I get people engaged? How do I get them to move beyond this to into a zone where recovery is part of the picture? Yeah, so for me, when people revisit that, I have to remind people, well, what's not being met? What is it that's not happening in this first part that we can relook at? Do we need to slow things down a bit?
I mean, there are quite a few things for those people with lived experience and those that may be suicidal where needs are not being met. There's, you know, it's very difficult to acquire good quality accommodation and housing these days.
I know.
The cost of living is becoming pretty intense. And if you're on a benefit, are these some of the things, the sort of desperation that people face?
Absolutely, Sheldon. And, you know, if we're going to be real about this, you know, I acknowledge that training is only beneficial to people working in the front line who are going to be working with people. But this is not the panacea. It has to be multi-pronged. We have to address these real dire situations that people find themselves in where they're pushed to the edge. Exactly what you've mentioned, poverty, housing, just life issues that are becoming so untenable.
I mean, you worked for Lifeline for quite a period of time. Lifeline had an item on the news, on 3 News last night, saying that they're, you know, in anticipation of these sort of crises over Christmas, they are enlarging their staff, I think, quite dramatically. I mean, it sort of is ironic, isn't it, that Christmas can be joyous for many, but for those people who maybe don't have family, they don't have a budget to be able to spend money without too much thought. They may not even have friends. They're forced to go to the missions, you know, lunch. In mm-hmm. Auckland, or the mission lunches throughout New Zealand. I mean, it's kind of a bit tragic. And I think Christmas brings all these things to the surface. I mean, is it a time when people have got to be vigilant, those supporters have got to be vigilant about those they are supporting and looking out for?
Absolutely, we do need to be vigilant. And then, you know, when we take off our worker hat, we then also need to be vigilant in our neighbourhoods. You know, there will be people on our streets that will not be participating in the same sort of activities that we are, and maybe we need to reach out a hand.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's happening? I mean, to some extent, community is a rare thing in some ways in New Zealand these days. We're all so me, and intent on getting on and doing our own thing.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Community is not what it used to be, especially when I was growing up. I know my mum lives on a street, and it's an amazing community, like amazing, the stuff that they do. They have little street parties, and it's quite a lot of you know, mixed ages, mixed ethnicities, and it's been a wonderful thing to witness, but that's few and far between. And, you know, this is what I was talking about before. It really is about us as a society and as a community, about changing the way that we behave.
Hmm. Is this what you say in your assist training, that it's necessary to change the way we behave?
Yeah, definitely. We do. We need to slow things down. I mean, people are really good at identifying in the training of all the things that, you know, where there are gaps and where we could be better. But then we get into situations that are sometimes beyond our control, like the places that we work for. And all that goes out the window. All of the stuff, the good stuff that we know about, can go out the window because of time pressures and all sorts of other things. The system's not designed to for us to behave in this way. I mean, look at Parliament. I mean, they're having a bullying, you know, I mean, I find that so fascinating that they are now having, you know, the investigation around bullying. I mean, that's kind of a little barometer of what's really happening in our community.
Well, I guess it's fair to say that bullying is pretty rife in mental health as well, and particularly in our acute mental health services, or even in our community mental health centres. And, you know, that surprises and bewilders me. I don't see how you can achieve a empathetic, caring and recovery atmosphere if there's bullying going on.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Sheldon. I really do. And, you know, and this is one of the things that we have to be mindful of, I think, because it can seem overwhelming. But when we bring it back to our individual interactions and we take ownership of the way of that we want to, you know, and that comes down to who we work for. You know, does this organisation hold the same values as me? And if not, then I need to find one that does. It goes for who I am as a person, how I respond to other people. I mean, this is just really basic human stuff that we teach in the Assist, and it sounds weird, but we've outsourced everything.
We now use
what, emoji?
Right. You said you outsource. Did you use the word outsource?
Yeah, we outsource everything. So instead of, in the old days, right, we used to be able to be quite resourceful as people, and we used to be able to, you know, connect with people on a human level. There were different codes at play. Whereas today, I sound really ancient. I'm not. But today, it's quite different. We don't even own our own feelings, i.e. the emoji.
Right. Right. Well, let's take another music break, Kate. I hope this plane is not about to take off to Dunedin.
We're okay,
are we? Well, we'll take another music break. Hang on the line there, Kate, and we'll come back to you after this track.
I've got another beauty for you. He's a Swedish singer who won the Swedish version of Idol in its 13th season in 2017. Whoops, he first released this as a digital download in Sweden on December the 8th, 2017, and it hit number 3, actually. The song is called Treading Water, and it's by Chris Clayford. Once I get it to where I want it.
Not been okay. I have been down at the bottom, making mistakes. Maybe I'm followed by trouble. When it was good, it was too good to be true. What can I say? Sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes life gets in the way. All of these tears fill up a river around me. I'm pushing harder when the water gets heavy. Will run. I have been scared of the water, but tide's gonna come, washing away all my problems. I'll make it through, breaking the waves in the blue. No one to blame. Sometimes life gets in the way. Oh, sometimes life gets in the way. All of these tears fill up a river around. I'm pushing harder when the water gets heavy. Cause I ain't letting go, fighting to stay afloat. All of these tears fill up a river, but no more treading water. No more treading water. Treading heavy water.
these tears fill up a river around me. I'm pushing harder when the water gets heavy, 'cause I ain't letting go, fighting to stay afloat. All of these tears fill up a river.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, with technician Declan Caron. And we're talking today to Kate Godwood, a self-employed educator and collaborator with the Assist Suicide First Aid Training Program. You're still there, Kate?
I am. Amazing song choices today, Declan.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I usually sit down on a Tuesday morning and pick something that's relative to the title. So I've got a site called Song Facts, and when I go on there, it tells me whatever I want to know, lyrics about the artist, that sort of thing.
I've learned all about Spotify, Kate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Premium's good, guys. It's only $15 a month, so I'll give them a plug. They're well worth it.
So that was Chris Clayford with Treading Water, and I guess that really captures some of the lyrics there, treading water, people treading water or having to stay afloat in the face of those sorts of things that we've been talking about, Kate. Do people coming to the Assist program, do they talk a lot about, well, I've just got these people that are just staying afloat?
Yeah, they do. And one of the things that we always say is that, because we use this analogy of the river, and I'll just say up front, it's not our beautiful rivers that have lots of moti and life in them. This is a river that can be dangerous, and we call it the river of suicide. And we acknowledge that if people who are in that river and they're thinking about suicide, if there aren't others to jump in beside them and tread water with them, because we can't do this alone, and help them get to the banks and out onto the sides, then, you know, that there is a real danger there that a person can, their thoughts can turn into behaviour.
I was just going to quickly throw on there too, I think the big thing is having that hope, because once you feel you've lost hope, that's at that point where you just want to give up. I know for me that's been a big thing in the past.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, what does Assist say about hope? I think we had somebody who described hope as a very small word with a huge health benefit.
Yeah, so we draw on hope a lot when we're looking at people's attitudes, because we also say, you know, I'm hearing, because we talk about stories and people tell their stories, and in the stories there are sometimes not hopeful events that have occurred, and we talk about how there has also been when they talk about what they would like to have seen. So there is hope there. And then we sort of segue into the actual framework, and we talk about how hope is, we have to have hope that the person who's in the river would like people to see them and would like somebody to help them. And that, if, that is how this framework works. If we go in with hope that the person is inviting help and wanting support through this.
So we've got to be on the either in the river or on the banks to see this person in trouble, don't we? How do we see the person in trouble in a built up area where we're often sort of locked away from visibility? You know, if we're in our apartment or our house or our flat or our rental. We can't necessarily see how people are getting on and how desperate they might be. How do we identify people that are at risk of suicide?
Well, you know, there's a number of things there. You know, because I've heard recently somebody say, I can't remember who it was, that there are no signs around suicide. And in essence, that's true, because there are so many. There's just too many to even sort of work out which ones are relevant. So if we just go into a situation and just assume that anybody could be at risk, of suicide or thinking about suicide. And then we look at the situation that a person finds themselves in. So whether that's online, because you don't go out of your apartment and you happen to be conversing with other people, online you'll notice things. You'll notice things that are being said that are concerning for you. And sometimes it comes from your intuition, and sometimes it comes directly from what's being said. So, responding to that and gently inquiring about that, what does this mean? You'll know that events have happened in a person's life, and you need to find out what the event means for that person. There's a whole range of different things that in Assist we teach you around what we call invitations, that if somebody is, that might be an invitation that somebody is considering suicide, and how then we respond to that.
You mentioned the word intuition. Is that a key part of the Assist program, of encouraging people to act on their intuition?
Yeah, it is. It was something that was taken away from Assist. It was originally in the it's been going since 1983, and it was originally there. And then they sort of took it away, and now they've brought it back because they understand just how important that is. When people say, you know, I've got this, I had this feeling, I know something's not right. And so we encourage people to connect back to their, intuitive feelings around something when it doesn't feel right. Mm. You might be hearing one thing, but it's not feeling right. And, you know, we're humans. We hone the skill of intuition from the moment we're born. That's why we know as a new parent when a baby needs to be fed or needs its nappy changed. There's a whole range of different things. We feel it. We know because that's how we communicate before we have words.
Well, babies tend to make it very clear, don't they? I mean, they scream or get uncomfortable or they make it obvious. But those people that are suicidal, well, you know, they go into their shell and they certainly very seldom probably make it very obvious. And as you say, that might be because of the stigma around suicide. I mean, the whole issue of how suicide has increased dramatically in the last 2 or 3 years and is almost double the road toll, and yet we still don't seem to know how to talk about it, and we're still divided about if we talk about it, are we not going to encourage people to do it?
Yeah, there's lots of mixed messages that we get in the community around what is safe and what's not safe to do. And that comes all the way from the top. So this is it's information that we've garnered as we've grown, right? That we've been just passed on, and some of it doesn't even have any evidence around it. And then there's stuff, information that we're passed from, say, the Ministry of Health. Mm. And again, that can be at odds with what international research can say.
So where there's no consistency, that's where it leads to confusion. And I think we mentioned Maggie Barry. I mean, here's this wonderful woman that had this gardening program and was the love of all New Zealanders, and now she's turned into some sort of
pariah.
Well, exactly. And even looks that way on footage and clips of her today, you know. So there's no consistency, and I guess it leaves us very confused as to what's happened. Yeah. Well, anything else that you'd like to mention about Assist? Is there a website where people who may be showing interest in this could check it out?
Yeah, so I guess I think what I'd leave people with is that Assist is really the only program in the entire world that has been scientifically proven to be effective for people with thoughts of suicide. And for me, as a person who's been on the other side, I think that is like the key piece. So it's really good for participants to learn confidence, but to know that you're actually making a difference to another human being, I think is helpful. If people would like to know more about it, they can contact me on my email, which is kayte@bouncemedia.co. It is .co and it's not a .com.
Right.
And it's .co.nz. So just so that people don't get confused. And I will have a website up at the end of the week, and that is kms.co.nz.
Kms.co.nz.
Yeah.
And that's going to be up by the end of this week.
Yeah, so that's my intention.
Right. Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. Just the last question. Who are the main groups that are registering for your training?
Look, they change all the time, but we have lots of NGOs, people working in mental health, which is always really helpful.
Mm.
And social services, we have educators, we have psychologists. Sometimes we'll get the odd GP if they've got the time off, which is fantastic. So we nurses and mums and dads and pastors and just a whole range of different people.
So if it's mums and dads, maybe they're confronted with a teenage child or a loved one that they need to support?
Yeah. Absolutely. And would like some skills around how to do that effectively and keep their loved one safe. Or it might not be their immediate family member, it could be somebody else. Or just somebody who's been impacted and would like to know more.
Yeah. So the effectiveness of ASSIST as a training program, a suicide first aid?
Yeah, it's very effective. I can, if you like, Sheldon, have you got a Facebook page, don't you?
Yes.
I can send the link to the study so that people can see for themselves how robust it was. And, they had the gold medal kind of standard, RCT. It hit a lot of marks, which is fantastic.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well, if you could put a link on your own Facebook page or on kms.co.nz, which is Kate's website that's going to be up at the end of the... You could put a link to the planetaudio.org.nz /take it from us.
Love to.
And we'll also edit this program immediately after the show and upload it onto takeitfromus.co.nz, which is part of Framework's website. So thank you very much, Kate. It's been very enlightening and it's great to catch up with you again.
Oh, it's been lovely to chat with you, Sheldon. Yep. And thank you, Declan, for the lovely music.
No worries.
I've really, really enjoyed speaking with you today.
My joy.
I'd love to choose some more.
Yeah.
We'll do that offline.
Yep. Okay, then. Enjoy Dunedin.
Thank you. I will.
Well, let's go to another music break, Declan.
Yeah, I was just going to say... there's a foundation in the UK that I've been following about teens' suicide in schools, and they're wanting to do a training course for the schools over there so that the counsellors can be trained and that sort of thing. And it's just got a feedback on it last night. They did a 200-kilometre walk over 10 countries, apparently, and probably in the middle around, in Europe or something, and raised £10,000. What I just wanted to send out a message is that if there are any guardians or parents out there, you know, it's about unconditional love. And even if your child has done something that you're not very pleased with, I would say, look, make yourself approachable, remove the fear and say we can learn from this and just be open. Because I think if you take that aggressive approach, they're not going to want to come to you and talk to you. And the long-term implications, as we know, for that can be fatal. Anyway, moving on with the track, on that, unconditional love, I've got a song for you today from Michael Jackson, I Just Can't Stop Loving You. And he was actually throwing peanuts at the producer and laughing and pulling faces at his sidekick while he was singing this. So good to see he didn't lose any of his humour. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. And that's on Planet FM 104.6. Thank you.
me high. I long to get by. This time is forever. Love is the answer. I hear your voice now. You are my choice now. The love you bring. Heaven's in my heart. At your call I hear harps and angels sing. You know how I feel. This thing can't go wrong. I can live my life to the moon. I just can't hope.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and we've just finished our interview with Kate Godwood, who is the self-employed educator and collaborator with the Program Assist. And I really urge you to check out more information about Assist and check out Kate's website that's going to be up by the end of the week at kms.co.nz. I wanted to make comment about the Mental Health and Addiction Inquiry and the fact that the panel has now reported to the Minister of Health, David Clark. The report features 40 recommendations for reimagining. That's the word that is used by Changing Minds. Reimagining the New Zealand mental health and addiction sector and how people across the country are supported to live well. The report is expected to be released publicly before the end of the parliamentary year, which is the 19th of December. The government says that it needs time to consider the 40 recommendations and the content of the report. In a media release, which was released to coincide with the Minister of Health's receipt of the of the formal inquiry. It said today's handover marks 10 months since establishment of the inquiry and appointment of panel members. Each phase of the inquiry, planning, consultation, deliberations and report writing has been intense and challenging. And I must say, I think congratulations is deserved for the work of the panel, the fact that they started in April in Palmerston North and led to over 5,200 submissions. So in 10 months, the panel has done a lot to dissect all of those submissions, to listen to people at 26 public forums and at hundreds of meetings with people with lived experience, whānau, service providers and community groups. And to be able to distill all of that and produce a report, they were required to take an extra month over what was anticipated. But I think it's a really excellent effort. However, there is already criticism. A health leadership team has been established by the Ministry of Health, whose responsibility will be to plan how the recommendations of the inquiry will be implemented. This leadership team has come in for considerable criticism for not including fair representation of people with lived experience. It also, the one other criticism is that DHBs are overrepresented. And I must say, when I looked at the sort of high-level executive nature of the members of this health leadership team, I did recognise very quickly that there weren't many people at the coalface, people with lived experience, who, you know, these changes are going to impact directly. So I think we're going to have to monitor this, keep a very close eye on the inquiry. Just going back to our interview with Kate, I think one of the key things about mental health that needs to change is the attitudes of people working in it and their bullying attitudes. And I think it's very appropriate that bullying has finally and suddenly reached the headlines, because I think it is rife in this country. So, Declan, we've also got news that the first phase of the new Te Ahu Mai Centre at Middlemore Hospital, that was opened by the Minister of Health, David Clark. Stage one of that is a 38-bed high-dependency unit. The design of the new unit is based on a courtyard model used in new mental health facilities in Australia. So that's...
Yeah, I see too. Jamie Lee Ross turned up for that, which I thought was quite good.
Well, he was a patient there for about 48 hours.
Yeah, I think it was quite good.
That's very brave of him as well. So that's been Take It From Us for another week. We look forward to having you as listeners again next Tuesday.
I'm going to give you some different Christmas carols in 2 weeks. See you next week.